How do we find real masculinity with Jesus hanging on a cross? The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for April is titled Man Up, The Quest for Masculinity. It's written by regular guest Pastor Jeff Hemmer. You can find out more at issuesetc.org or call Concordia Publishing House 1-800-325-3040. Men in all stages of life will appreciate Man Up. The Issues Etc. Book of the Month, Man Up, 1-800-325-3040. That's the popular confirmation hymn, Let Me Be Thine Forever. There are a lot of things that are done in the church that the average person might not realize why things are done. It's part of the church's task is to continually provide the rhyme and the reason, the theological rationale for what she does, what she practices, how she does what she does. That's part of the task. But what if there is no explanation or no sound theological explanation? When I was confirmed, I believe I was confirmed on a Palm Sunday. Some churches do it on Pentecost. But in my 25 plus years of being a pastor, a Lutheran pastor, I've seen a lot of Palm Sunday confirmations. Where did the practice come from? Is there a sound theological, is there a Lutheran reason for Lutherans confirming on Palm Sunday? Joining us to answer that question on this Friday afternoon, Pastor Mark Serberg, pastor of Good Shepherd Lutheran Church in Marion, Illinois, and author of a recent column titled, Why Do Lutherans Have Confirmation on Palm Sundays? Mark, welcome back.
Thanks a lot.
First of all, how common is the practice of confirming on Palm Sunday?
Let me say it's quite common. And you just mentioned the two most common dates, which are Palm Sunday and Pentecost. At the very least, Palm Sunday kicks off the confirmation season, and historically, it certainly is one of the major dates for doing it.
So, just to be clear here, is there, in your research, a theological reason for the association with Palm Sunday?
Not originally. The practice arose in Germany, where the school year generally ended around this time in the spring for spring planting, and it became the practice to hold confirmation at the same time that the school year was ending, and so it coincided with Holy Week and Palm Sunday, and that over time became sort of a fixed date, especially legally as time went on.
You say legally, what do you mean by that?
Within the German state church system, the actual ending of the school year and confirmation day would sort of be set at the same time.
So it was started simply because it coincided with the end of that period of year wherein the kids were getting their formal education. What other historical roots does it have?
In terms of the particular date for Palm Sunday?
Yeah.
That's it.
Okay, so really no theological reason whatsoever.
No, there's no theological reason whatsoever. It is purely the end of the school year, which in Germany was fixed with spring planting, so kids are available to help. And because those coincided and confirmation was sort of aligned with the school year, Palm Sunday became one of the most common days to do confirmation. So it's entirely devoid of any theological rationale.
So what we practice here in the U.S., in American Lutheranism, broadly speaking, is just a practice that our forebears brought over that had no real rhyme or reason to it.
Exactly. And you know, so when the immigrants come over, they continue this German practice they're used to, and especially in rural areas where they sort of, set up the same system they had in Germany. And so once you do this year after year, this becomes sort of, you know, the fixed way to do it. And if you're a pastor in these, one of these congregations where Palm Sunday has always been the day, woe to you if you decide to try to, you know, change it and do it on a different Sunday.
Now, have there been attempts at a kind of reverse engineering a reason, retroactively applying a theological
Certainly.
Reason?
Yes, and the explanation you'll hear, and it, you know, and it's not without some sense, is that because confirmation is going to mark when people begin receiving the sacrament of the altar, and it is moving towards Easter, that by being confirmed on Palm Sunday, then you can receive it during Holy Week on Monday, Thursday, and then on Easter. And that's sort of after the fact. You know, you have this practice, you try to come back then and provide some kind of theological explanation, which is in fact how confirmation was born in the first place. The fact that there was a second anointing that was done, it had to be done by a bishop, it got separated from the baptism itself, and then theologians tried to explain, you know, why this thing existed. This has been a common practice in the history of confirmation.
So take us through that a little bit. That's helpful information to note that confirmation was not considered a standalone rite apart from baptism originally, but somehow by accident, historical accident, became...
Sure. The basic source is the baptismal practice in Rome, and we get our first information in about 500-600 AD for that, where the bishop was required to do a second anointing at the baptism. And in Rome itself, this was not a problem because either the pope was there or they had these suffragan bishops who could do it, and they would do it in the stead of the pope. But as soon as you moved outside of Rome, and especially once you moved north into Gaul, it wasn't possible for the bishop to be there to actually do this second anointing. And so over time, the second anointing becomes separated from the baptism itself. And of course, then you need to explain, well, what is this thing? And the theology begins to develop that it is an additional gift of the Spirit for strengthening in the Christian life and for the battle of the Christian life. And that becomes the basic theology that exists at the time of the Reformation when it begins, at which time confirmation itself, and this is kind of an interesting thing, it had absolutely no relationship to baptism because it was a separate sacrament for giving the Spirit. It had no relation to receiving the sacrament because when you received it was purely random based on when the bishop was there and when your parents brought you, and it had absolutely no relation to catechesis either. So it was just this standalone thing that it sort of developed on its own.
Pastor Mark Serberg is our guest, a little history on confirmation and on the strong association of the rite of confirmation with Palm Sunday on this Friday afternoon, April the 7th. More with him on the other side of the break. This is kind of a pattern when it comes to confirmation, as Pastor Serberg has noted. A lot of practices that later get retroactively explained or in some ways kind of justified. We'll talk about that.
If you're like me, you remember when education was about the basic skills of reading, writing, and arithmetic, and about reading great literature and history that gave our kids models of what it is to be a good person. Memoria Press's Classical Christian Curriculum is bringing this kind of education back. Get $5 off your next order by using the coupon code LPR. For more information, go to memoriapress.com. Memoria Press, saving Western civilization one student at a time.
Your pastor has been called to shepherd you as a member of Christ's flock. Doxology offers an innovative program of advanced study retreats where your pastor can be refreshed, renewed, and refocused. Find out more at doxology.us. Many pastors report that doxology has been one of the most valuable learning experiences since seminary. Doxology, the Lutheran Center for Spiritual Care and Counsel. Doxology.us. Doxology.us.
No format change necessary. Jesus, the same yesterday, today, and forever. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Hi, I'm Pastor Palmer from Catalina Lutheran Church in sunny Tucson, Arizona. We're a confessional, liturgical, hymn-singing, Bible-teaching, gospel-preaching congregation, and we would love to share God's good gifts of word and sacrament with you. Look us up online at catalinalutheran.org or give us a call at 520-825-9255. God be with you.
Many Lutheran pastors outside of the U.S. receive little or no seminary education. Luther Academy provides theological triage through conferences, books, and journals. Help support Luther Academy by making a tax-deductible donation at lutheracademy.com or call 260-452-2211. Serving Lutheran pastors to the ends of the earth. Luther Academy, 260-452-2211 or lutheracademy.com.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about the Association of Palm Sunday with the Rite of Confirmation. Pastor Mark Serberg is our guest. He's author of a recent column titled, Why Do Lutherans Have Confirmation on Palm Sundays? It's kind of a mischievous association with confirmation in particular. It seems to be one of those church rites that accumulates a lot of justifications and, as you write, a lot of ideas that are not only without Lutheran justification, but contrary to Lutheran theology. What are you talking about?
Well, the development of confirmation, especially from the time of the Reformation on, where it did come into existence in Lutheranism, has largely been driven by Pietism and rationalism. In Pietism, it was the idea that the individual needs to be fully converted, and that confirmation could be the process that would bring this about. And so you had this strong emphasis on the subjective internal experience of the individual. And so many of the things like writing your own vows and those kinds of things begin to appear in confirmation, and that's what drives its implementation in a lot of Germany. And then really confirmation as we know it, most of the forms that we sort of experience today and the things we associate with it really developed in the age of rationalism. And rationalism wanted to downplay that which reason could not understand, and obviously the sacraments fit into that category. And so in an attempt to downplay baptism, it sought to emphasize and add importance to confirmation. And so things that we associate with confirmation now, such as the separate examination or the Bible verses that you're given to a particular confirmand, or the sort of cultural trappings of decorations for confirmation, the fact that it's this very large family event, those are all things that came into play in the age of rationalism, and they were intended to make confirmation into a really big deal, so that in doing so, you're actually downplaying, baptism. And it was treated as confirmation, which is, of course, this rational statement of commitment. The whole idea of the oath becomes a very big deal. That is what Christianity should be about. We can understand that it's reasonable, and we don't want to focus on, what God is doing through baptism.
Now, I guess that raises the question, what should we do with it today? Not only the day on which it's practiced, kind of giving it its own day seems to set, in a lot of ways, competes with the celebration of Palm Sunday, something that probably would be better not to occur. But what else should we do with confirmation today?
Well, ideally, I think we would be better off if we returned to the Wittenberg model, as I like to call it, in which there was no confirmation. It was simply catechesis that went on, and when a child was ready, that is, they knew the text of the catechism and had an understanding of those texts as given in the small catechism, that they were examined by the pastor, absolved, and then began receiving the sacrament. There was no public ceremony of this nature. And, of course, rather than having children that were in, eighth grade, you could have children that were in, what we would call third grade, receiving the sacrament. And instead of having children wait, even though they understand what the sacrament is and want to receive it, instead of making them wait, instead we would, you know, allow them to receive the gift, you know, when they're ready to receive it.
Why would that be an improvement? What would that help reduce by way of confusion and clarify by way of what the church really does practice?
Well, we'd be putting emphasis on where, you know, Christ does place emphasis, which is on the gift of his body and blood, through which he gives us the forgiveness of sins. And we would not be basically teaching children the non-sacramental life. I mean, essentially, you know, a child in third, fourth grade certainly understands what the sacrament is if they hear it talked about in church at all. You know, they want to receive it, but then we tell them, well, not until eighth grade are you actually going to receive it. And what we're doing then is we're teaching them it's essentially, you know, it's a non-essential part of the Christian life. You don't really need it because you can get by all these years with it just fine. And instead of, from the beginning, trying to weave the sacrament into the piety of our children so that they see it as receiving the sacrament as part of the Christian life, we're actually teaching them the exact opposite.
So you're not saying that the church should abandon the purposeful and intentional instruction of children, especially toward the reception of the Lord's Supper, or generally in the Christian faith? You're just saying confirmation isn't the answer, really it never has been.
That would be my argument, yes. That and you really have, when you say confirmation, that's one of the difficulties, is that people mean different things by the term, or actually it has multiple meanings that it carries with it, in that on the one hand, you're talking about a rite that is a specific ceremony you're going to have. On the other hand, you also are, often people mean catechesis and a process that leads to confirmation. And then a third thing really is, you know, a theology, what you actually mean that happens in confirmation. And one can say, I don't think the rite of confirmation and having children, you know, wait until that time, like eighth grade, to receive the sacrament, to say I don't think that's a good thing is not to say that I'm against or that a person is against ongoing catechesis, you know, full catechesis so that they can learn all those kinds of things. You're just saying the way that we have constructed confirmation and put it in this extremely important position in the Lutheran Church really works in ways that are detrimental to the things that, you know, we claim to believe.
Finally, then, it was done once, as you say, at the time of the Reformation. The Wittenberg model simply said, we don't know what this is for. The justifications seem to smack of things that distract from baptism and the Lord's Supper, and they dispensed with it. It came back in practice. Can we do again what the Wittenbergers at the time of the Reformation did?
As a pastor, honestly, it'll be very difficult. And I think, and this is, I guess, one of the things that I hope we can do, people need to begin to learn and understand where this thing came from and to think more about the way it functions. There are lots and lots of very sentimental associations with confirmation, and that actually in the age of rationalism is something that became very big, sort of enhancing the sentimental value. And people have very strong feelings so often about confirmation. But I think at the very least we need to start having a conversation about where did this thing come from and how does it really function in relation to what we claim to believe, teach, and confess. And I think the more we do that, the more we're going to find that the Wittenbergers, and it's not just Wittenberg, it was the majority, the vast majority of Germany and all of Scandinavia, up until the middle of the, you know, the 1600s, you know, this was the dominant way of doing it. There was no rite of confirmation, and they probably had a pretty good idea what they were doing.
Pastor Mark Serberg is pastor of Good Shepherd Lutheran Church in Marion, Illinois, and author of a recent column titled, Why Do Lutherans Have Confirmation on Palm Sundays? You can read it under the Listen on Demand page at issuesetc.org. Mark, thank you very much.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Folks, confirmation isn't a graduation program. Our children and our grandchildren need to be connected to Jesus, nor is graduation from high school an opportunity to what disconnect from the church. This is acutely in the minds of LCMSU, an organization that supports Lutheran students as they head off to college and face countless challenges to their biblical worldview, to their doctrine, to their ethics, and their other Christian practices and piety. You can find out more about LCMSU at lcms.org/lcmsu. College is tough. You need Jesus. We'll help. lcms.org/lcmsu. Pastor Matt Harrison is our guest on the other side of the break. We're going to be talking about the resurrection of Christ and the resurrection of the Christian. He's president of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. He'll be with us right after this.
The 500th anniversary of the Reformation approaches. A good time to ask, who are we as Confessional Lutherans? What's our heritage? The Confessional Lutherans for Christ Commission has produced the Layman's Guide to Theological History. Go to the clcc.org and see which of these presentations and books would be most helpful to you and your fellow parishioners. And consider becoming a member with us as the CLCC seeks to help more people know what it means to be a Confessional Lutheran. The clcc.org.
Recently graduated from high school or college and looking for a chance to serve a community in need while sharing the good news of Jesus Christ? Lutheran Young Adult Corps may be for you. Lutheran Young Adult Corps provides opportunities for long-term, full-time service for 10 weeks through the summer or 10 months over the school year in places like St. Louis, Philadelphia, and Boston. Find out more about Lutheran Young Adult Corps by finding us online at lcms.org/YACORPS or on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Lutheran YA Corps.
Emily finally had to face the truth. Her church choir was a mess.
Katie Schuerman from her new audiobook, House of Living Stones.
Sure, they'd managed to turn out a few decent choral offerings for Sunday worship every now and then, but their confidence and morale were presently hanging lower than pants on a wrapper.
You can purchase and download an audio version of the novel House of Living Stones at Amazon, Audible, and iTunes. House of Living Stones by Katie Schuerman.
Tired of mommy bloggers telling you Lent is about simplifying your life? Totally over the History Channel speculating on whether or not Jesus' skin was olive or white? Check out the April the Lutheran Witness. We're talking Lent, Easter, and Jesus, who hangs on a cross for you, lies in a tomb for you, and is risen and returning all for you. Visit cph.org/try-Lutheran-Witness for a special offer of 6 issues for $6.99. The Lutheran Witness, interpreting the contemporary world from a Lutheran perspective.
Sacramental. Historical. Liturgical. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
In Western societies where the most basic notions of right and wrong are not only denied but actively suppressed, recovering a biblical and distinctly Christian understanding of the natural law is absolutely essential.
Aaron Wolf of Chronicles Magazine talking about his presentation at this summer's Issues, Etc. Making the Case Conference.
Traditionally, Christians have understood that man is not born a blank slate just waiting to be programmed like a machine. We are moral creatures whose imaginations are darkened by sin. Yet every person still has a basic understanding of right and wrong because God has revealed it to us in his creation through natural law. Denying the vital role of natural law has grave consequences, not only for society, but for the church's crucial task of proclaiming the gospel.
You can meet and hear Aaron Wolf making the case for natural law Friday, June 9th and Saturday, June 10th at the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference in Collinsville, Illinois. For more information, visit issuesetc.org.